Sir Winston Churchill in Ireland? Hero or villain?
Winston Churchill, of course he's a villain when it comes to Ireland. All I need to say is the Black and Tans, the treaty, he probably started the Civil War.
I think Churchill's role in terms of the negotiations, he does his best to bring the two sides together.
I can accept war hero, of course, but his record on Ireland is, to be honest, pretty appalling.
I think he's quite a positive figure, despite all the things that are said about him.
I can look back over nearly 60 years of Irish politics, in which I have often been actively involved.
Hello and welcome to The Long and the Short of It with me, Tim McGarry, and my very good friend, Dr. David Hume. How are you, David?
I am good, Tim. I thought you would have a cigar today.
We should have a cigar and champagne in the studio because we're not allowed to go anywhere. In fact, David Hume wants to celebrate the life of Winston Churchill. The issue today is whether he is a hero or villain. I think the evidence is clearly on the side of villainy.
I think prepare to be surprised.
How dare you? No, this is a penalty kick for me. I haven't done very well this series, but this one I'm pretty sure I'm going to win this one hands down. Winston Churchill, controversial figure in Irish history, was pro-Home Rule, anti-Home Rule, couldn't make his mind up about Home Rule. He brought the Black and Tans to Ireland. If he didn't bring them, he certainly supported them. He bullied Michael Collins into signing a treaty and signing his own death warrant. He started the Irish Civil War. During the Second World War, he tried to bully Eamon de Valera. He then insulted the Irish people at the end of the Second World War. You couldn't like the man.
Well, look, you could, from a unionist point of view, you could say, well, yes, Churchill, 1912, he was supporting Home Rule. He offered Northern Ireland to De Valera during the Second World War. But you've got to look at things in the round here, not just those sort of aspects of it. And I think that's what we'll want to do.
Well, look, David, let's set aside your natural prejudices. Let's speak to an expert on this subject. Let's find out some evidence for the fact that, obviously, Winston Churchill is a villain.
Natural prejudices.
Churchill spent a lot of his childhood in Ireland, but was far too young to let it have any influence over him.
Ach, hello, baby Winston. It's meself, Bridie, your Irish nanny. I'm just back from the old shopping in O'Connell Street, and be Jesus, didn't we go mad? We put everything on tick. I tell you, Winston, never in the field of human shopping was so much owed by so many to so few. And then we went for a walk on Dollymount Strand, and wasn't there a crowd of fellas? And didn't this almighty brawl break out? Oh, yes, they were fighting on the beaches and they were fighting in the streets and in the hills and they never surrendered. Anyway, I've got to go. I'm going up north to see my cousins this weekend. It's all I need, waking up north and seeing the dreary steeples of Fermanagh and Tyrone emerging once again. Bye, Winston.
We're delighted to be joined on The Long and the Short of It by Dr. Robert McNamara, Senior Lecturer in History at the Ulster University. Robert, thank you very much for joining us.
Not at all, Tim.
I don't want you to take this the wrong way. We tried to get the real expert on Winston Churchill, which is Boris Johnson, but he's very busy at the moment. So you're second in line after Boris Johnson because you have written about Winston Churchill and his relationship with Ireland. I didn't know his relationship actually goes back to from when he was very young.
In his 1930s memoir of called My Early Life, A Roving Commission, the opening few pages describe him being a small child in Ireland because his father, Randolph Churchill, was the private secretary to his grandfather, the Duke of Marlborough, who was then the Lord Lieutenant or Viceroy of Ireland.
And Randolph Churchill, of course, is rather famous for his famous Ulster will fight and Ulster will be right. Did the young Churchill inherit this unionist attitude?
To an extent, yes. Now, Randolph was kind of curious on Irish policy generally. I mean, he was a conservative. So Churchill becomes an MP after the Boer War in the early 1900s. But remarkably, he then falls out with the Conservative Party over the issue of free trade, and he becomes a Liberal Member of Parliament, and he gradually begins to trim his views on Ireland, which had been strongly unionist following from his father's example, and during the Third Home Rule Bill crisis between 11 and 1914, he often is quite, you know, the public face of saying, you know, Ulster must accept home rule. And by 1914, along with others in the British Liberal Party, such as David Lloyd George, he's coming around to the view that some kind of exclusion for Ulster, i.e. partition, is likely to be the only solution which will allow home rule.
And he famously got a very warm reception when he advocated home rule in 1912. He came to Belfast, was supposed to speak at the Ulster Hall and ended up in Celtic Park, isn't that right?
Yes, yeah, the unionists threatened him with violence, and the Ulster Hall, of course, where his father had made this famous pro-Ulster unionist speech in 1886, is basically barred to him speaking at, and he ends up having to go to this to Celtic Park, the Belfast Celtic ground, wasn't it? Yeah.
That from a nationalist perspective, Churchill's reputation in Ireland rests on his attitude during the War of Independence. He's sometimes blamed for introducing the Black and Tans. I don't think he introduced them, but he was more of a hawk than a dove when it came to the War of Independence, is that right?
Yeah, I think as you quite rightly say, the idea that Churchill in Irish nationalist myth and legend introduces the Black and Tans, but that's not really correct. But he is Secretary of State for War during the early part of the Anglo-Irish conflict between...
So Dr. Robert McNamara pointed out something which I didn't know. I'll be fair, I didn't know that Churchill spent a lot of his childhood here in Ireland, and his connections with Ireland were very strong. But of course, whilst you're trying to say that this man is a hero, the unionist opposition to Winston Churchill coming to Belfast in 1912 was very serious. In fact, he was nearly beaten up by some of the shipyard workers who attacked him outside his hotel.
But the fact that he was so connected to Ireland, that was a crucial thing. It was quite interesting in terms of this portrayal of him as the great, you know, awful, awful, awful figure in terms of Irish history. Here he is. He doesn't like Cromwell too much. You'd think he'd be right there, with Cromwell, would you not? If he's so bad, as you say, he is.
In 1904, he said, "I remain of the opinion that a separate parliament in Ireland would be dangerous and impractical." And then in 1912, he says, "Oh, no, it's a great idea." And then later on, he's a unionist again. The man can't make up his mind.
No, I think he just came back to where the natural inclination would be there. You know, the one thing he did say, once the two parliaments were established, "I want to see the two executives get together." So he definitely wanted them to meet in this North-South Council that they had envisaged. But he realised that there wasn't going to be one parliament.
Well, I think he, no matter what, he always comes to his views on Irish politics from a British imperialist perspective. And that is not one that is very helpful to nationalists. Maybe we need another perspective. We need another historian to put you right and to tell you some of the list of things that Winston Churchill did that certainly make him a villain.
Yeah, I don't agree he's a villain at all. I think you've personified him very badly here.
"Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few."
I'm joined by Dr. Caoimhe Nic Gavaid from the University of Sheffield, Senior Lecturer in Modern History with a specialism in the Irish Revolution and 19th century Ireland as well. Caoimhe, you're very welcome to the programme.
Nice to be here.
So I suppose the first thing to say in terms of Churchill, he's an iconic British political figure. Does that tip the balance for him in Irish nationalist history, do you think?
Well, no. I must say I think that there are understandable reasons why he has this negative reputation, I suppose, in Irish nationalist eyes. And it's particularly during the War of Independence. He was an enthusiastic supporter of the decision to send the Black and Tans into Ireland. And he was also the originator of the decision to send the auxiliaries. I mean, the listeners will probably know their reputation, those forces, the Black and Tans and the Auxies, engaged in regular reprisals, burning down towns and cities in some cases across Ireland. There was a deliberate policy of sanctioning collective punishment against the civilian population. So it's not just targeting those who were known or suspected of being in the IRA. And that's a kind of heavy mark against him. There was also a sense of, during the Home Rule period, of not quite being able to trust him. He changed position on the Home Rule question before the war. He would always have described himself as a very strong supporter of the Home Rule Bill, but moved his position when it came to what, if any, concessions should be granted to unionists. But the other issue is, of course, during the First World War, he bore responsibility for the disastrous Gallipoli campaign, which had such heavy losses for Irish divisions. So there's sort of a whole list of things that help us to understand why he has this negative reputation, I suppose, in Irish nationalist eyes. And the last thing, he pressurised Michael Collins to take action against anti-treaty forces in the Four Courts in Dublin in June 1922, which of course precipitated the start of the Civil War. Churchill gave Collins an ultimatum: either you clear them out or we will have to do it ourselves.
So it's quite a list then.
It is a list, yeah.
Emergency cabinet meeting, June 26, 1940, and Taoiseach Eamon de Valera presiding.
Gentlemen, I've just received a telephone call from Winston Churchill. He wants us to join the war, and if we do not, he has threatened Ireland with terrible consequences.
Are the British going to impose economic sanctions?
No, it's worse than that.
They're going to invade us.
No, much worse than that. They want to give us Northern Ireland.
No!
I know. Can you just imagine it? Us having to cope with a million angry prods.
Wanting to march through Dublin on the 12th of July.
With their horrible Nordy accents. No surrender. Anybody want a treebake?
Here's me what. Sticking out. Your ma's your da.
We can't have a united Ireland.
What are we going to do?
Well, it's Churchill. With any luck, he'll be on his second bottle of champagne and forgot about it tomorrow.
This was indeed a deadly moment in our life. And if it had not been for the loyalty and friendship of Northern Ireland, we should have been forced to come to close quarters with Mr. de Valera, or perish forever from the earth.
Well, Kiva has a lot of interesting things to say there, Tim. I found it interesting, the relationship between Churchill and the Dardanelles and the impact that had in Ireland as well, with so many serving.
Well, I accept that, because you said there was a list of things this man did that make him a villain. He changed his position on Home Rule, the Gallipoli campaign, yes, he pressurised Michael Collins into taking action in the Four Courts, he gave ultimatums. This man doesn't really care about Ireland.
Well, I take the opposite view. I think he does care about Ireland, and that's why he's trying to move things forward as he sees it. I mean, he was very concerned, the anti-treaty forces, he was concerned they would gain ground, what would happen then, so he's encouraging Collins to try and nip it in the bud, effectively. He encourages Craig and Collins to meet, Kiva mentioned as well.
But he's not a neutral observer, he's part of the British government, he's pro-imperialist, he certainly wasn't going to allow nationalists to have a republic. Let me concede one thing, the whole thing about the Gallipoli campaign on the Dardanelles, I kind of wasn't quite aware of how the impact that had on nationalist Ireland. And it's interesting in comparison to, say, the Somme, which is, you know, held up as a totem by unionists, so this is their sacrifice for Ulster, whereas the Dardanelles seem to be the exact opposite. Nationalists going, why are we out there being slaughtered for no particular reason by Churchill, who doesn't take responsibility for it?
And that is one of the flaws, that he doesn't sort of say, you know, I made a mistake here. But then the First World War, they made lots of mistakes. They just didn't realise the nature of trench warfare in some areas.
Well, let me give you another argument of why you should think he's a villain. Because during the Second World War, he basically rang up Eamon de Valera and said, would you like Northern Ireland? Please take it, you know, because we need you in the war. He basically was going to sell you out.
Yes, he was, absolutely. And I mean, they got under pressure, and he thought this was the perfect way out of the pressure. And as was said earlier, he was obsessed with the treaty ports and so on. So he was obsessed with the defence of the UK. Yeah, I mean, it's not something we want to celebrate. And some people should remember, of course, too. So he's a bit of a villain in that context.
We'll just end it there. He's a bit of a villain. I say he's a villain. You say he's a bit of a villain. Case made.
So, Mr. Churchill, you've had a very long and distinguished political career, but it's not without controversy. Many Irish people say that you behaved very badly towards Ireland.
Nonsense. I love Ireland and the Irish. I owe a lot of my famous Churchillian image to the Irish.
Really?
Yes. I had my first ever glass of champagne when I successfully negotiated the Anglo-Irish Treaty in 1921. I started wearing a Homburg hat when I saw Michael Collins wearing one. And of course, there was my famous V for victory sign.
It's Irish?
Oh, yes. When I went to Belfast in 1912 to argue for Home Rule, People said unionists would be angry at me. Not a bit of it. Everywhere I went, every unionist gave me the V for victory sign.
Right.
For some reason, they all got it the wrong way round, but I knew what they meant.
We're joined on the Long and the Short by Lord Bue, who's the author of a book on Winston Churchill and Ireland. Lord Bue, thank you very much for being on the Long and the Short of it.
Pleasure, Tim.
The question we're discussing is whether Churchill was a hero and a villain. I tend more to the villainy side of it, but I think his record is best described as mixed. He's a bit all over the place, isn't he?
Oh, that's true. There are big, big changes of position at various times. He could defend them by saying, in some cases, the facts had changed. In other occasions, I'd have to say his ambitions had changed. But you have to also just take into account, this is somebody who was, as a child, raised for a while in Dublin. His relatives were Irish, who were living in Ireland on both sides of the differing political traditions in the island. That makes him very different from other British politicians. It may mean that doesn't excuse him from opportunism and ill judgment at certain times. And he certainly skates over in his memoir some of the darker aspects of his relationship to Ireland. But on the other hand, you're dealing with somebody who's serious about it at some fundamental level, cares about it and knows quite a lot about it.
So he has some intimate knowledge of Ireland. From the nationalist perspective, it's always very simple. They say that he was the man who brought the black and tans into Ireland.
Well, it's certainly true that he supported the broad policy. Once the IRA war had begun, he supported the broad policy of bringing tough guys over to sort these people out. He's always impressed by Irish military bravery. He's always, the Irish soldiers he served with in the Boer War really impressed him. He wasn't actually impressed by the IRA, which he's regarded as shooting a local policeman from behind a hedge. I think it was a phrase somewhere, armed baboonery. What he also believed earlier than most is you also have to talk. That's the interesting thing.
He did support the reprisal policy, though, of the Black and Tans and the auxiliary.
Yes, he did. But you want to be realistic about this. In effect, he did. I mean, you could make a paper defense that he didn't. But I totally concede the point that in effect they did. Now, the reason for this is simple. They did not believe in, and this is one of the lessons they'd learned in the First World War, you can't have popular officers killed by the IRA and expect their men not to retaliate in some sort of way. And I don't think there is, as it were, anything to be gained by not facing up to the brutality and the horror of this. But that was their view.
Paul Bue there. I thought he was very fair, and I think it's a good thing for this programme that we get peers of the realm on this show. I thought he was genuinely very fair there. He didn't hide away from the fact that Winston Churchill may not have introduced the Black and Tans. He certainly bears a lot of responsibility for the reprisal policy. Paul may not quite change my view, but at least he puts it into slightly more perspective. He wasn't as patronising about Ireland or racist towards Ireland as many people think.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was very, very interesting. I was so glad that he set you right on a number of points.
Set me right?
Well, he did his best, you have to be honest now. You have to put it into the context of, yes, he was an imperialist. It was an essential part of his being, I think. But what else could he have done? The whole situation in Ireland was very, very unstable. You had all this violence. So the Black and Tans were brought in. But Lord Bue did say that ultimately Churchill believed you had to talk. But the progress of history was happening, and it's very difficult to see how it could have happened any differently in a shorter space of time.
I think his attitude after the end of the Second World War, when he made this famous speech, basically accusing the Irish of flirting with fascism and saying, basically, we could have invaded you. We could have swatted you away like a fly. I think that's entirely typical of Churchill's attitude to Ireland.
Well, don't forget, though, the Americans were pretty upset with Ireland as well at the time because they didn't like the neutrality either. So Churchill was a bit irritated, obviously. I think what really made things worse at the very end of the war was when De Valera made that gesture of sympathy after Hitler's demise. Churchill did say after the war he said that Northern Ireland had been a lonely sentinel and kept the lights of liberty blazing effectively.
Okay, well, look, the question was Churchill a hero or a villain? I say he was a villain. Even you'd agree, certainly not a hero.
No, I think he had the best interests of the whole island at heart.
You see that? He just won't give me an inch.
I'll do anything in reason, he said in those minutes, in the cabinet minutes that I've looked up. I think he's underrated in terms of his abilities to try and make peace effectively. Here, Tim, have a cigar. And that's it from the Long and the Short of It for this week. Next week, we're going to be debating the Irish Civil War Did Republicans create Northern Ireland?
Did Republicans create Northern Ireland? I wonder if you'll be celebrating them in this centenary year, will you?